Hello, and welcome to our program about books, brought to you by Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Lana Collins with co-host
Kathleen Schock,
and during the next half hour, we will be reading articles from the San Antonio Express News and talking about
books, and more books. Today we're going to talk about time for reading resolutions. We have several tips which will open a new chapter of fulfillment without the tallying. These have been compiled by Stephanie Mary, who is with the Washington Post. Any reading resolutions can be tricky. Popular online reading challenges generally involve setting a goal to complete a certain number of books. But is reading, say, 50 novels over 12 months really a recipe for a fulfilling reading year? Not necessarily, even if it does make someone a one percenter. I found that focusing too much on my book numbers in recent years was affecting my reading habits in a negative way, Nina Akalis wrote when we asked subscribers to our book club newsletter about their reading resolutions. She found she was more hesitant to pick up long books and forced herself to keep reading books she wasn't enjoying. So her goal this year is to pick up whatever I feel like reading without caring about its length. That will probably entail bringing a 953-page copy of The Pickwick Papers by Charles Dickens on her next vacation. If you, too, are looking for an attainable reading goal this year and one that doesn't involve tally marks, here are some ideas from our readers. Set a timer. If reading every day is your goal, you might consider establishing a time objective. Erin Sager is setting a timer for 20 minutes, during which she'll read without distractions. Margaret McNary, meanwhile, is trying to read for an hour every day rather than her usual habit of binge reading a couple of times a month. That's not to say I won't binge read, she qualifies. I really need to make a dent in my TBR list on my e-reader. Last count, 586.
Whoa.
Read fewer books. Many respondents were recovering book challenge participants who want reading to be an activity to savor rather than a means to an end. Last year, Julie Reeser read 102 books, but looking back over the titles, I'd be hard-pressed to tell you much about them, she writes. That didn't feel like how it should go. So I want to read more deeply in 2024. Others feel that while reading can be a wonderful escape, it can also be too much of one. I think I withdraw from friends so much more time can be spent reading, Judith Horowitz admits. The last 3 years have yielded 80-plus books per year. I think 75 is quite enough. Document progress. Raise your hand if you keep meaning to write down the books you've read. Stacy Becker is with you. I plan to do it every year, but forget. Then 10 books in, it's too late, she writes. Maybe this will be the year. You can even take it a step further, as Vicki Winderstrom does, and assign each book a letter grade. So when I'm looking for more books to read, I'll look back at my list of previously read books for writers I particularly liked, she writes. Readers who I give a B+ or the rare A to are then checked on online for other books they've written. Peruse your personal library. If you're anything like us, your shelves are crammed with books you haven't read. That's the case for Andy Paris, whose resolution was to read all the books on her bookshelf before buying more. She's already failed, she writes. She bought 5 books the first week of January. Dean Bryant hasn't entirely forbidden new books, but of the 80 books he plans to read this year, at least 50% of them must come from his own stash. Tackle a classic. Some respondents are finally getting around to reading the Iliad. Might we suggest the new Emily Wilson translation? Others are completing Proust bibliography. Laurie Munn is going to read a Jane Austen book. Nope, I never have, she writes preemptively, addressing our own incredulity. Stephanie Martin is embarking on her 3rd reading classic challenge, which entails reading one of the greats. She started big in 2022 with Ulysses, then moved on to Moby Dick in 2023. This year, it's The Sound and the Fury. Scroll less, read more. Yes, the screen is ever tempting, but a book is more satisfying. Denise Bolton is weaning herself off mindlessly scrolling on my phone or computer, an activity that has increasingly overtaken my reading time and offers me little pleasure in return. I don't think I can completely stop all contact with the internet, but I have been horrified by how much time I give over to it each day, and I want to reclaim some of those hours and my deteriorating attention span for the 100 or so wonderful books that are waiting for me on my shelf of unread books. Broaden your horizons. It can be easy to fall into a reading rut, revisiting the same genres. Several of our readers want to escape that fate by reading more nonfiction, more books in translation, and more books set in different regions around the world. Brenda Arnold tends to always read the same kinds of books when left to her own devices, but joining a book club where she lives in Munich, Germany, has led to new discoveries. I'm the only English speaker in the club, so the other German ladies come up with book suggestions that I've never heard of, she writes. Go big in a new way. Melissa Lefko read 102 books in 2023, but she writes, this year, I am excited to read deep instead of large, and yet her goal is large, just in a different way. I have set a goal to read 24 of the big books that have been on my TBR shelf for years. Those include such lengthy novels as 2666 by Roberto Bolaño, Almanac of the Dead by Leslie Marmon Silko, The Luminaries by Eleanor Caton, and Cryptonomicon by Neal Stephenson. Make it a family affair. One of Jenny Collins' goals is to read to her 3-year-old granddaughter every Saturday and Sunday. Likewise, Libby Thomas-Wheat plans to continue bonding over books with her granddaughter. We have influenced each other over the years, she writes. She's convinced me to throw down a book after 100 pages if I hated it, and I've convinced her books on tape count as she walks. And what about a little friendly competition? Sharon Balwulski would like to read more books than she did last year, a respectable 114, but more importantly, she writes, I need to read as many or more books than my sister, Erin. Last year, we tied. Inspire others to read. Marley Gigley would like to set a numerical book goal, but with a 5- and 7-year-old free time is a luxury she doesn't always have. So instead, she's going to encourage, inspire, bully as many people as possible to get a library card or sign up for Libby, the app that most public libraries use to lend ebooks and audiobooks. I've had great success with this in the past and get a thrill when folks reach out who I don't speak with often to say they are using Libby for their book and audio needs. Bail without guilt. We've said it before, but it bears repeating. Given how many people wrote in to say this year this was their resolution, you don't have to finish every book you start. If it makes you feel better, you can take a cue from Melanie Lassoff-Leves. I'll thank the author in my head for their hard work, congratulate them for their publishing success, and move myself on to the next one, she writes. And finally, have the next book ready. Anne Caggiano's resolution for books is simple. Never be without one. That's a sentiment Susan McKendry echoes, though with a bit more urgency. I have long held the belief, although it only works for the most dedicated of readers, that as long as you have a new book to pick up and begin the minute you close the one you just finished, you will live forever. Not wanting to take any chances, I have 9 new books waiting on my coffee table, as well as the one I'm currently reading, Tom Lake by Ann Patchett. Now, if you'll excuse me, I need to go pick up where I left off. Happy reading.
All right. Well, thank you, Kathleen. And in that line, I have a young adult series book that debuted in February, and it is the book titled Wave Rider approaches the final chapter in San Antonio area author book titled Amulet series. It's a series that by Kazu Kibushi. It's titled Wave Rider. It is the final chapter in his series book titled Amulet. This review is by Renee A. Guzman. He is a staff writer for our San Antonio Express News. Ask Kazu Kibushi to describe his best-selling graphic novel series, Amulet, and the Japanese-American writer and artist rifles off about as many sci-fi and fantasy influences as that titular stone has facets. There's the young wizardry of Harry Potter, mixed with the ancient lore of the Lord of the Rings, the robo-warrior action of Ultraman, and the mecha robot battles of Mobile Suit Gundam. Every animated and illustrated fantasy by legendary filmmaker Hayao Miyazaki. Oh, and don't forget 80s popcorn fare by the likes of James Cameron, George Lucas, and Steven Spielberg. Throw all those works into one comic book adventure, and you have Amulet. Kibushi's coming-of-age saga is about a young heroine and her magic talisman, which she uses to defend a magical world from an evil king and the demonic, quote, shadows, unquote, that would overtake its inhabitants. It's a sequential art epic that spans 16 years and more than 1,900 pages. And you're just in time to see it end. Wave Rider, the 9th and final book in the Amulet series. I always intended to make what I would call the pocket epic
unquote, said Kabushi, who lives just north of San Antonio with wife and fellow cartoonist Amy Kim Kabushi and their two children. Quote, something kids could put in their backpack that was full of so many big ideas that they could read over and over again. I think the true test of a good book is whether or not they reread it, unquote. It's certainly drawn its share of fans. Since Amulet's 2008 debut with the first book, The Stonekeeper, the series has topped the New York Times bestseller list and wowed readers around the globe with nearly 7 million copies in print and translations in 21 languages. The debut novel also is an American Library Association best book for young adults and a finalist for the Children's Choice Book Award. Amulet begins with series heroine Emily Hayes and her mother Karen surviving a car crash that claims the life of her father, David. 2 years later, Emily, her kid brother, Navin, and their mom move to Emily's great-grandfather's house to begin a new chapter. There, Emily uncovers a mystical amulet, which later warns her to protect her family from danger. Cue a strange noise from the basement, which turns out to be a monstrous slug that kidnaps Karen, and that's the mother. As Emily and Navin race to their mother's rescue, the walls collapse behind them to expel them into the surreal world of Aledia, an Earth-like planet with giant mushroom umbrellas and dim forests inhabited by anthropomorphic citizens and strange automatons such as a castle-like home that transforms into a giant robot. Kabushi said, quote, it's a big sci-fi action-adventure story that's geared toward multiple generations. It's also about two kids who have to learn responsibility. They're taking a lot of agency that's put into their hands. They basically have to become their parents' parents and do what parents do, unquote. Kabushi likens Emily's journey to that of Harry Potter or Luke Skywalker, that of a youthful hero who learns how to wield great power while serving as the reader's eyes to a bigger world. Kabushi said, quote, she's sort of like a lightning rod for the emotions that occur in the story. It's how she gets into trouble and how she gets out of trouble. Aside from that, I just wanted a tough young girl character. It's something that I grew up with watching Hayao Miyazaki movies as well, unquote. That also goes for Miyazaki's graphic novel, Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind, the filmmaker behind such Japanese animation classics as Spirited Away and Princess Mononoke, clearly informs the look and feel of Amulet, which Kabushi crafts with a moody, painterly style, and mature, character-driven narrative that never talks down to its readers, no matter their age. Quote, one of the strengths of the series is that Kazu layers the adventures with characters whose moral choices affect the story's outcome, unquote, said Graphics VP publisher David Saylor in a statement to the Express News. Quote, he doesn't shy away from giving kids lots to think about while they marvel at the wildly imaginative images of robots, flying machines, and fantastical cities that make the world of Amulet feel like a fully realized place, unquote. Kazuhiro Kazu Kibushi was born in Tokyo in 1978, moving with his mother and brother to the United States in 1982. Missing Ultraman and other Japanese shows prompted Kibushi to draw his own comics. Soon he was drawing inspiration from Mad Magazine artist Mort Drucker and children's book artist and Disney animator Bill Peet. But it wasn't until Kibushi started pursuing a film degree at the University of California, Santa Barbara, that he tried to do his own comic book in earnest, and promptly gave up because it was just too much work. Focusing on film, Kibushi worked at an animation studio for a couple of years. Then in 2003, he got what he thought would be his break, a film project with Disney he would co-write and co-direct. Only when the phone rang, it was Disney basically telling him not to do the project. Rather than fight the House of Mouse, he relinquished the rights to the project to the other filmmakers involved and went back to the comics drawing board. That return led to editing the comics anthology, Flight, followed by a similar kids version anthology called Explore. It also led to meeting his future wife, Amy Kim Ganter, an American manga writer and artist who contributed to two volumes of Flight. The two married in 2007 with Kibushi's friend and understanding comics author Scott McCloud officiating the wedding. Amy Kibushi, whose own magnum opus is the manga-inspired Rama Chronicles, likewise praised her husband's Amulet work for its rich settings and even richer characters. She said, quote, they feel like they're living, breathing characters that have lives once you close the book. It feels like it's still living even when you're not there. So you're just visiting the world when you open the book, but it's still living, unquote. Kibushi noted Emily's story was inspired by the work of two seemingly disparate visionaries, Francis Ford Coppola and Michael Jackson's Captain EO, the 3D sci-fi short by the Godfather director, starring the King of Pop that ran at Disney theme parks from the mid-80s to late 90s. But crafting his own far-out fable wasn't easy. Kibushi found himself glued to amulet for hours on end, often making several drafts for each page. He said, quote, "For 5 straight years, I was just grinding, maybe 18 hours a day, and I'm not seeing my kids or living my life," unquote. It came to a head in 2012 when Kibuishi was diagnosed with a life-threatening case of bacterial meningitis, a condition so serious he was put into a medically induced coma. After he came out of it a week later, he had relearned how to walk and patch together memories. But the ordeal did more than just give him a second lease on life. He said, quote, "I came out of it with a different perspective. I don't know if I'm necessarily slower with my work right now, but I've decided to slow it down, and I think it's richer," unquote. Amulet's characters have a similar knack for similar self-discovery. It's one thing to go by the Golden Spider-Man rule that with great power, there must also come great responsibility. Emily and her fellow stonekeepers learn that with great power, there must also come great patience and great wisdom to know when to yield it and when to walk away. In that sense, Wave Rider reads like the perfect goodbye, begging to be rediscovered. And again, once more, that book is titled Wave Rider, the final chapter to the 9 series of Amulet, written by Kazu Kibuishi.
Lisa Marie Presley's posthumous memoir is set for a fall release. This article is by Hildy Itali, who is with the Associated Press. A memoir that Lisa Marie Presley was working on at the time of her death is being published. The book, currently untitled, was completed with the help of actor Riley Clough, the eldest of Presley's 4 children. "Few people had the opportunity to know who my mom really was, other than being Elvis's daughter," Clough said in a statement released by publishing house Random. "I was lucky to have had the opportunity to work on preparing her autobiography for publication. It's been a privilege, albeit a bittersweet one. I am so excited to share my mom now at her most vulnerable and most honest, and in doing so, I do hope that readers come to love my mom as much as I did." Lisa Marie Presley, the only child of Elvis and Priscilla Presley, and a recording artist in her own right, died at age 54. A coroner's investigation found that the singer-actor died of complications from bariatric surgery years earlier. Lisa Marie is now buried on the grounds of Graceland Family Estate in Memphis, Tennessee, where she had been the day her father died in 1977. According to Random House, Lisa Marie had wanted her daughter to assist on her memoir, and it will be a honest rendition of her life. The audio edition will be read by Chloe, along with some excerpt from Lisa Marie's taped recollections.
And you have been listening to About Books on Owl Radio. You may stream it on your computer or smartphone, and you may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed between 8 and 10 p.m. this evening. This is Lana Collins with co-host
Kathleen Schock
saying
goodbye from Owl Radio.